Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Captain Basu from the flight deck. I sincerely apologize to you for this slight delay in our starting from London. Our next stop, Kennedy Airport at New York. We shall be taking off in westerly direction from London Heathrow. Thereafter, we shall be flying western direction all the way to Kennedy Heathrow. After takeoff, we shall fly over England, Ireland, cross course on Atlantic at Shannon, landfall Newfoundland, Canada, overflying Newfoundland, Nova Scotia, Canada, United States, overflying Boston, on to New York, Kennedy. We shall fly initially 33,000 feet, thereafter 35,000 feet. Weather forecast, we expect quite a bit of turbulence, cloudy. Landing forecast, expected to be snowing at New York. I sincerely hope you enjoy your flight and your meal. Thank you very much.
Well, from talking to Maggie Hambling in London at the National Portrait Gallery and Rose Garrard at the Lewis Johnson Gallery, here I am on board flight AI-107 bound for New York to make some tapes with American artists, but mainly to go for the British Artist Sound Workshop at Franklin Furnace, which includes Sylvia Zarenik, Stuart Brisley, Charlie Hooker and Gerald Newman. And audio arts tapes will also be available there for listening. It's taking place from the middle of April to the middle of May. Well, we're at the end of the runway now. Just about ready to take off, I would think. There the engines go. The roar of the engines can be heard. We're moving very fast, picking up speed now. Here we go. Picking up speed all the time. Still on the ground. Just about to lift off, I would think. Yep, lift off. That's right. Quite a bang there, but anyway, we're up. Up in the air. Quite smooth apart from that final bump. Anyway, you can see Heathrow beneath us and the fields and roads. We're turning to the right now, building up speed all the time. A few turbulence going up through the clouds. Anyway, I'll turn the tape recorder off now, sit back in my seat and hopefully be given a glass of some sort of sustenance quite soon. And we'll resume again in New York, I think. Right, well, in fact, we haven't arrived in New York yet. I thought I'd turn the tape recorder on because people are sitting down, settling back to watch the in-flight movie, and I thought I'd take the opportunity to have a chat with some of the passengers. Passed a lot of sleeping bodies on this aeroplane. Here's Steve Rogers, who works for the British American Arts Association.
Thank you.
Steve, I knew you were actually going to be on this flight, and I mean, why are you coming to New York at this particular time?
You want to know the truth?
Please, the truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth.
Well, really, it's just a very quick quick trip to iron out some of the really the last major crises of this monster festival. We've got three real functions this trip. Actors' Equity, who for the last 9 months have been sweetness and light and wonderful about everything, have suddenly decided to get upset, and they're threatening to not allow any of the theatre companies that are in the festival into the country, on the basis that that every time they pick up a newspaper they hear about another British theatre company that's going to go to the festival that they haven't heard about. And it's really just a lot of companies who've decided on their own that they want to go and have got all the hype going with the newspapers, but actually have no official invitation, or in most cases don't even have the money. Which is just that they feel frustrated that they're hearing all these things and they've heard nothing officially through the festival office about these people. So I had to go and smooth them down.
Right. So in fact, the festival is a festival of British art in New York for about what, 2 or 3 months.
Festival lasts for about about 2 months, and it's designed as a sort of a real happy marriage of British and American corporate money and British life and culture. The British are still the largest single investors in America, and British culture is still one of the largest ethnic groups in America. And the excuse for the festival is the 200th anniversary of the signing of the peace treaty. And the festival was dreamt up as a celebration and a cementing of the economic and cultural ties between the two countries. And it was originally envisaged as a kind of very glossy midtown corporate celebration. But naturally enough, the British government wanted to see more than that, and the British American Arts Association wanted to see more than that. So we went along and we made a noise, and they eventually accepted the fact that they had to have more than midtown exhibitions and orchestras. So we were commissioned to create what's been called a contemporary arts program. It's not a fringe festival by any means. It's an official part of the festival program, but it does cover the areas of experimental theatre, of performance art, video, younger painters and sculptors, poets, film, the complete range. And we also saw our job as being not only to include some of the more interesting elements of British art that are not known in America, whereas the RSC and the London Symphony Orchestra already know, everybody knows what they do. Not everybody knows what a company like Hesitate and Demonstrate do.
Looking at the souvenir program produced by the Illustrated London News, certainly, there are some very interesting exhibitions of work by John Constable and Henry Moore and so on. And perhaps one might feel that there is a sort of a top-heavy feeling about it, of work that is historical and, I think New York knows about anyway. I mean, are you happy, for instance, that what's really happening within contemporary art in England is being properly represented by sort of younger artists?
Absolutely, I couldn't agree more. The problem with this festival is that there was never a point at which the festival had a sum of money that it could then just sit down and decide how it was going to spend to make the ideal festival program. What happened was that, having launched the idea of the festival, we then had to hunt around to find what corporations wanted to fund what. And in many ways, the festival program has been determined by what the sponsors actually wanted to sponsor. And inevitably, the international banks and oil companies are more interested in sponsoring blockbuster Henry Moore exhibitions at the Metropolitan Museum than they are interested in funding group exhibitions of younger British artists at maybe at a Soho gallery which, their own clients maybe have never heard of. But having said that, in fact, American corporations are much more experienced at the whole business of giving money to the arts than the British are, and they do understand their responsibility.
Okay, well, we're about 2 hours away from New York, and you travel backwards and forwards, Steve, quite a lot, and obviously you're quite familiar with what's going on in New York. I mean, what, for you, are the most significant areas of attention within contemporary art in New York at the moment?
The areas that are most interesting at the moment seem to me to be a continuation of one of the central concerns of contemporary experimental artists over the last 10 years, which seems to be an attempt to find some way of marrying together serious, classical, perhaps, art forms with popular cultural forms. It's a movement that really came out of minimalism, especially in the musical field, with people like Philip Glass and Steve Reich. And now there's a new generation after those people, after those early experimenters, who have seemed to have been much more successful, in fact, than their predecessors. I think largely they've been more successful because they've, in a way, dropped a lot of the more classically oriented ideas. For instance, in the musical world, Philip Glass and Steve Reich were still deeply concerned with musical structure, with harmonics, with at times with melody. Whereas now, the new generation, who were all in fact actually taught by people like Glass and Reich, people like Rhys Chatham and Glenn Branca and Barbara S., they have approached it much more from the popular musical side. Their musical roots were growing up with heavy metal rock music, with jazz music of the sort of rock jazz kind, and that is their roots in a way, whereas the roots of someone like Phil Glass are very much in Cage and that kind of experimental music. And coming to it from the sort of the musical, from the popular musical side, I think that people like Rhys Chatham have actually produced a much more successful synthesis. They're not interested in the sounds of the concert hall. They're interested in the sounds of the streets and the sounds of the discos, and they've taken those sounds and put them used some of the forms and the techniques of serious music, and they've certainly got a kind of serious music content. Musically, I think that New York City is still very much the center of the world in experimental music, even though I would add that I think that Michael Nyman in Britain is probably one of the most important composers in the Western world at the moment that I know of, a seriously underrated composer, in fact.
What about the sort of visual art side? I mean, what about Schnabel and Clementi? I mean, what sort of, when you travel back and forth to New York a lot, I mean, what sort of impact and position do artists like that hold? I mean, particularly Schnabel, who had a show at the Tate not so long ago.
The insidious kind of position, really. I find that the works of particularly people like Julian Schnabel and the new image painters in New York, talk to any younger artist and they'll tell you that it's yet another dealer's putsch, that it's, you know, that Julian Schnabel is really a very meretricious painter, that he's producing work for his dealers at a fixed number of paintings per month, he's on contract to do that, and whilst I'm not denying that someone like Schnabel's can and does produce very good paintings and very moving work, very striking imagery, and it does seem that his use of found materials and found objects incorporated into the paintings, which is obvious parallels with the sort of the crossover ideology of using ordinary forms with classical or art forms. Obviously there's a parallel with that, and I think it's quite a genuine, serious attempt to actually do the same in painting that someone like Rhys Chatham is doing in music. But a successful artist in New York is big business, and I feel that he's been spoiled, or he's spoiled himself. And it's an unpleasant sensation when going around the galleries of Midtown or of Soho and every third or fourth gallery has Julian Schnabel hung in it.
Right, well, on that note, I think I'll go back to my seat, as we've made something of a mini feature out of this flight. what I think I'll do is turn the tape recorder back on as we approach Kennedy Airport and talk us into the landing.
Ladies and gentlemen, we will be landing at New York shortly. Would you return to your original seat and fasten your seatbelt? Thank you.
I've returned to my seat now, and we are actually approaching Kennedy Airport. I didn't think this item would be complete without the landing. So we're gradually going down on what I'm sure is our final descent. New York State is clearly visible beneath us. Lines of houses, streets, fields. Very built up, but not the characteristic New York skyline as yet. The engine sound has dropped, as you can probably hear. We're over sea now completely. Fins haven't extended as yet, but there's a sort of slowing down, certainly evident. Yes, there they go, the wing extensions are moving out hydraulically. You see, we're turning, I would think, about 90 degrees.
Gentlemen, would you kindly extinguish your cigarette and adjust your seat to the upright position?
Here we are on our final descent to Kennedy Airport. Oh, I would say about 80 feet above water. Coming in, very smooth flight, wing flaps extended. Land now just about visible underneath the wings. Very, very close to the ground, I would think, about sort of 70 feet. Apartment blocks, small houses, little marina. Not snowing, as Captain mentioned as we took off, which is very gratifying. The New York skyline is visible out the window to the left. Empire State Building, I think it is. We come over marshland, very close to the ground, dropping. Here we go, and touch any moment, any minute we'll hit, touch the ground on the runway. There it is, air brakes up, reverse thrust in engines. There we go.
Take the train to the plane. Take the train to the plane. The train to the plane.
Well, with feet firmly back on the ground, in fact, now I'm at the Green Street Cafe, where they're beginning to prepare for a reception organised by the Contemporary Arts Programme, which is part of this Britain Salutes New York Festival of Contemporary Art in New York. And Mary Tierney, in fact, has been acting in a very crucial role in organising the various events. Mary, what, in fact, is about to happen? Because I believe the Mayor of New York is going to come to this reception.
Yes, we're having a party. Hi. For the Contemporary Arts Program of the Britain Salutes New York, because I think the events that are taking place under the umbrella of contemporary arts are really going to end up proving themselves to be the most exciting part of Britain Salutes New York. if you've seen the London Illustrated News brochure, magnificently produced, of the large events, the Constable exhibit, and various other highly financed, beautifully done, certainly, but yet it lacks what I feel the contemporary arts gives, the spontaneity, and the fringe and off Broadway events, and the really exciting things that New Yorkers
don't know about.
Certainly can't, and that have never been transferred, and thanks to the British American Arts Association, Jennifer Williams and Steve Rogers, who've worked for the last 2 years to select and bring over the most exciting representations of modern British fringe culture, if you will. I wanted to throw a party for that element, because we're not as heavily endowed financially as the other events are, and the mayor wants to support this kind of a party because he feels that's what New York is all about, giving a place for, it's all well and good, the Metropolitan Museum will be there hopefully forever, but these are the things that he wants to give attention to and that don't have the big bucks behind them, but I think you're going to be the most exciting thing.
Okay, well, I think a lot of people clamoring for your attention, so if you want to go and
catch up with you later,
and we'll hear the mayor when he starts talking.
Yeah, some people to talk to.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
This is Eine Feine Music, Eine Feine Nacht Music, Eine Feine Kazoo Music.
Well, still at the Green Street restaurant, and this is a group called Kazoophony, who are about to perform as part of this reception.
Choice for Governor Mary Tierney.
Thanks very much, everyone, for coming. And I would like to introduce you now to David Lloyd Jacob, who is chairman of the Britain Salutes New York Festival, whose idea this whole festival was 2 years ago. Please come up. He's going to. And Steve Rogers from British American Arts Association, who actually designed the Contemporary Arts Program, which we're celebrating today. And Steve wants to make a presentation to Mayor Edward Koch, who has come.
This is the Mayor of New York, Edward Koch.
He has come to you
here in person.
And to receive this lovely book about the festival.
Here is Steve Rogers. It's Mayor Tiernan says of the British American Arts Association. About to present the book of the event.
On behalf of Britain Salutes New York and from my own part on behalf of the contemporary arts element of Britain Salutes New York, I'd like to thank you and your city for hosting our festival and being so welcoming and so friendly and so encouraging. And on behalf of the festival, I'd like to present you with a souvenir brochure for the whole festival.
I'm delighted to receive it and to be here so that I could not only receive this, but hear the kazoo for me.
The kazoo for me wants to present you with a kazoo.
Mayor, here is a genuine Kazoo-tivarius kazoo with the two flags on it there.
All my life, I've wanted a kazoo.
It's the mayor playing the kazoo.
I'm very interested to know what your particular interest is in this Festival of British Art in New York. What interest do you have in it?
New York City is the international capital of culture,
yeah.
And British art, Irish art, Italian art, Israeli art, African art, they're all welcome here, and we're great connoisseurs.
I think that's very interesting. Are you going to be going to any of the particular events taking place as part of this festival?
I will, and I will rely on Mary Tierney,
yeah.
Who I know very well and yeah. whose expertise is superb in this area, and I will ask her to select the events that I go to.
Thank you very much. Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks so
done?
Much. Thanks, yeah. You're
thank
set.
You.
Done.
Okay.
Christopher, could we start by discussing why you happen to be here as an English MP in New York at this particular moment in time? I mean, is it to do with the British Festival of Art here?
Well, I ask myself why I'm here. It's for a number of reasons. One is that I've been for 18 months now on the British Committee of Britain Salutes New York, and having put so much effort into the preparation of a thing, it's a pity not actually to see it in action. The second, though, is that I'm chairman of the House of Commons' Committee on Education, Science and the Arts, and 18 months ago we issued a report about the future of the funding of the arts in Britain, which advocated, we didn't call it a Ministry of Culture, but a Ministry which brought together the arts and broadcasting and film, a sort of multimedia ministry in a sense. And it struck me that seeing how this festival went from the highest of high art with the Royal Ballet to the fringe stretching all over Manhattan would give me some ideas when we come to respond to the government, when they give their answer to us. The British government haven't yet told us what they think of our report. They're going to do that in May or June 1983. But as soon as that's happened, we will want to come back to them. So it's both in my capacity as the parliamentarian responsible for these things in the House of Commons, and because I'm on the committee, that I'm here.
I mean, do you think then that the actual existing institutions that manage and administer the arts at the moment in England couldn't arrive at an event of this nature? I mean,
well, I think two things on that. I think the we are too modest in going for events of this nature. For instance, I think the British government might have put far more material help into this Britain Salutes New York effort than it has. It's really, the British Council has done a certain amount, but officially the government hasn't gone in for this sort of thing. Now, when I go to Greece or Italy, I find that the arts are right at the centre of politics, that political parties, particularly of the left, boast as to how much they have spent on the arts and they're going to spend on the arts. When Mitterrand was elected in France, he trebled the expenditure on the arts. He's had to cut it down a bit since then with financial problems of one kind and another. Now, I would like to engender that sort of attitude towards the arts from the British government, because I'm not frightened of that sort of government enthusiasm for the arts. And I think our commitment to what we call the arm's length principle of putting it all out to folk in the Arts Council sometimes means that we put it out to individuals who represent a certain area of the arts, and bits get missed out.
I just wonder if it's to do with a sort of fundamental lack of confidence in what is, after all, a very unique sort of range of interesting, energetic, creative activities that one finds in Britain and that are recognised all over the world, but there seems to be a sort of lack of confidence at home somehow.
Well, you're right about this. It may be that if we blew our trumpet too much about it all, that it would all get institutionalized in some sort of statutory form, and the creativity might not be as strong. But what is the phenomenon? It's absolutely true that there is in Britain this tremendous lively creativity right across the artistic board, and in the higher reaches of government, a lack of understanding, and certainly a lack of willingness to tell the world about it. That's why I'm very pleased about that Britain Salutes New York isn't just about the Royal Ballet and the Royal Shakespeare Theatre and the London Symphony Orchestra, but about all sorts of other events like this one.
I was going to ask you, are you entirely happy that the sort of way in which British sort of creative activity is being represented here? Because, as you say, there are quite a lot of events of the nature of the Royal Ballet and Royal Shakespeare Company, which, of course, no one would argue about being here. But then there's a whole sort of layer of activity going on that perhaps isn't being represented by younger, more sort of experimental artists.
I'm not entirely happy, but I am convinced there's far more of a alternative creative fringe, if that's the best way of putting it, to the festival, than there might have been 6 months ago. I think there's a lot of very good stuff here, but there could have been a lot of very much better stuff.
Just finally, returning to your intention or your report to do with a sort of Ministry of Culture that would take in a wide range of arts, sort of group them together in order to, I suppose, create a new structure or context for creative activity. I mean, if the Labour Party were to be elected, would you be confident about this coming into being? I mean,
I would. 5-10 years ago, I wouldn't have said that. But I'm was astonished at the Labour Party's conference last year that the biggest fringe meeting that took place was one called Labour Arts. And I think that a whole sea change is taking place, not just in the Labour Party, but on the left in Britain, which sees the arts as an essential piece of life, in a sense that it's not been seen like that in the past, and that if we did get another spell of responsibility for Britain, I'm quite sure the arts, in one way or another, would figure more largely, and that I'm quite sure would mean that the expenditure of them would be protected better than it looks like being in the coming years.
Yes, and I mean, just with expenditure, when there are cuts, it's unfortunately the case that it is the less established, perhaps more tentative areas that are more vulnerable than the major institutions. And one would like to think that that area could be perhaps protected a bit more.
Yes, the only real justification for spending money on the arts is not so that you carry on with the same recipe as before. Indeed, all the evidence shows that private sponsors are quite willing to sponsor Beethoven and Shakespeare every time. The difficulty about private sponsorship is that it shies away,
yes,
these days from the experimental, even more than it used to. I mean, in the old days when you had eccentric millionaires, you sometimes got them backing what seemed then eccentric ideas in the arts. Now business has become more institutionalized. It's not the decision of one person anymore. And government simply has to back this sort of activity if it's going to survive at all.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very apt comment given how much interest there is now in British kind of arts bodies to find private sponsorship, but it has attendant risks.
Oh, it has very great attendant risks, and it's accepted far more here in the United States, and I think it's established in Britain now. What we mustn't hide our eyes to is that it can never account for more than quite a tiny fraction of the expenditure on the arts. It's an important fraction, and nobody wants to turn money away wherever it comes from. But the bulk of the money arts are going to remain lively arts, will have to come from the taxpayer, and therefore we've got to have taxpayers who are educated and willing to spend the money in that direction. And we traditionally have in Britain, we've had a system of art colleges unequaled anywhere else in the world, and I think that really is the reason why, as we said earlier, there is this terrific undercurrent of creative activity going on, which we ought to tell the world about more, and I'm glad we are doing now.
The next item on this side of the cassette is Hudson River Sound Map by Anea Lockwood, and then follows Paul's Song by Charlie Morrow.
Thank you.